Welcome to the Farm Bits podcast.
Farm Bits is proudly produced by the Nebraska Digital Agriculture team and hosted by students at the University of Nebraska.
The Farm Bits podcast comes to you each week to discuss the trends, the realities, and the value of digital agriculture.
Through interviews with expert producers and innovators from across the agriculture industry, we hope that you step away from each episode with new practical knowledge of digital agriculture technology. Hello, FarmBits followers, and welcome to another episode of the FarmBits podcast. I'm Camila.
And I'm Katie. And we are glad to have you with us as we begin our discussion on AI and robotics in agriculture with Dr. Nitin Ray. Could you please introduce yourself and provide an overview of your career journey related to digital agriculture thus far?
Sure. Thank you, Katie and Camila, once again for inviting me for this podcast. It's really nice to be talking about my research journey and whatever we do at NDSU. So my name is Nitin Rai, and I'm a current postdoctoral research associate at the Department of Ag and Biosystems Engineering at North Dakota State University. My PhD or my doctoral work was on developing site-specific weed management technology using drones, basically, and it was much more targeted towards developing spot spraying applications on multiple weed species. For now, I am much more associated with crops. So I'm kind of working on multiple crops such as sunflowers, soybean, canola, which is not grown across all of the US, but mostly North Dakota since we kind of share borders with Canada. And some other crops. I think there's another one, there's another master's student, she's working on wheat. And so I'm kind of occupied working on wheat as well. And so for as far as my research journey in digital ag is concerned, I have always been interested in data analytics and AI, specifically right after I joined my doctoral program here at NDSU. I was always curious about how and what researchers really do when they get images from drones. I had no idea during my master's, I had no idea. I just used to read a couple of papers and, they used to talk a lot of technical things about we calculated this index and that index and, applied machine learning and stuff like that. And I was always curious of how all of these different research domains comes together to help us deliver something really valuable in agriculture. And so with that curiosity, I started my doctoral journey back in 2019. And that's how I've been, doing some good research in agriculture, specifically in precision ag.
Nice. What led you to biosystem engineering? Why study digital agriculture technology applications?
Sure. So there are two parts to this question. I'll try to take it step by step. So what led me to biosystems engineering, which is like ag and biosystems engineering kind of goes together. So back in 2013, when I first joined my undergrad university, and I mean, not a lot of people would know this, but my undergrad was from a university in India, which is Asia's third oldest university that offered a degree in agri engineering, which is Sam Higginbotham University. And it was basically founded by an alumni of Ohio State. So he went to India back in 1900s, I think, and he founded, and that's when they started offering a course in agriculture engineering. And so I have my undergrad degree there. I still remember that day when, my elder brother, he took me to that university for an on-campus visit. And that was the first time I heard about agriculture engineering. Because, other specializations or other courses such as computer science and mechanical, you get to hear because a lot of universities are offering that courses, but ag engineering is not offered by all of them. And so, when I checked the curriculum and, where the alumni of that university were at that time, I found out that, as per the curriculum, I saw that agriculture engineering is not just about agriculture, but it kind of blends different areas into itself. For example, someone who is a mechanical engineer can come and work in robotics, or someone who is a computer scientist could help with algorithm development, stuff like that. So, when I checked the curriculum, like I said, I saw that, for the first couple of years, I was learning a lot about mathematics, fluid dynamics, and other areas of research, other areas of studies as well. And so I was like, yeah, I mean, this is amazing. I would like to pursue my career in agriculture engineering because it kind of blends everything together. It's not just you're being trained as a computer scientist and then you just work on algorithms, but you're trying to learn the algorithms and you're trying to bring it into the agriculture, like basically like the applied kind of things. And so, yeah, that led me to agriculture engineering. And then I had my master's from Indian Institute of Technology, which is one of the best in the nation in India. And I had my, I was specialized, I did my specialization in agriculture systems management, which was much more focused on the soil side of things. But as a part of my master's thesis or my master work, I still ended up developing a soil dryer, which is again a precision ag using Arduino and different kind of microcontrollers that we use in robotics. And then finally in 2019, I joined NDSU, which was again with drones and weeds and site-specific applications, which I will be talking in next questions and a couple of them. So yeah, that's what led me to biosystems. And the question about why study digital agriculture, like I said, two very main reasons. The first one is that it blends multiple areas. It's not just about agronomy, or it's not just about agriculture, like what people think agriculture. It's like multiple people from multiple research domains could come and create something really novel. And why study digital agriculture is because, as per the current research, AI is booming right now. And digital agriculture fits into that space of, how can we bring multiple ideas in AI, data analytics, robotics, and then we could create something that, farmers or growers or extension educators could see it working in the field. And so, yeah, for those two reasons, yes, digital agriculture is the way out.
Awesome. I love that perspective. And I love that you talk about like all these different branches of a lot of different backgrounds and people with a lot of different knowledge sets and how that gets tied into agriculture and how we make that applicable. I really like that. Yeah. So we're going to move to the next question and we're really excited. So if you can talk to us more about your recent research, that would be awesome.
Sure. So yeah, there's a small story that goes behind this question. While I was preparing this, reading this question, I just thought to share this. So since my doctoral work was on wheat science, not specifically in wheat science, but like kind of integrating the precision wheat management technology and the wheat side of things. When I was going to join as a postdoctoral associate in the same department, I just told my advisor that I am willing to do anything but wheat for my postdoctoral research, because I already gained so much experience with wheat technology and stuff like that. And I wanted to expand my area of research or explore, where I can bring the application of AI into different fields. And so I do personally believe, like I said, it's not just limited to weeds or anything of that sort, but we could always scale it to different crops and see what we can get from there. So right now, what we're trying to do is to collaborate with a farmer who lives like really close to the Canada border. So wherever his farm is, Canada border is like 1.5 hours from there. So what we're trying to do is to fly a UAV, like a small unmanned aerial system on a canola field and trying to predict its yield. And what we're trying to do is to bring different kind of spectral signatures into the picture and see which one gives the best result for yield prediction and which stage of canola could be, it's actually helpful in predicting yield. And so recently we are collaborating with multiple universities. We're collaborating with Purdue and I think Mississippi is also there. And so that paper is kind of ready. We have sent it for like a co-author review and stuff like that. So this is just with canola, what I'm trying to do. But like the other questions dealing with sunflower stand count also, which is again, we are collaborating with the same farmer and he has, I think about 110 acres of sunflower plots, and One of the things that I found out, you know, like we, like already I went with another master's student, says flying a small and mandated system on a 110-acre farm is not at all practical. And so obviously we have some different kinds of, you know, ideas how to process the data. For instance, for the last 2 to 3 days, I've been really busy, you know, trying to go there and collect the data and come back. And this is also, I had a meeting with my advisor and I said, like, unless and until we are covering all the 110 acres for plant stem count, I am not interested in doing it for 10 acre feet, because a farmer is really interested in knowing, you know, like getting a holistic view of, you know, what the stand counts are. I, you know, if I just take a 10 acre field and try to do a sunflower stand count, it does, I mean, for a researcher point of view, it would really make sense to me that I'm trying to, you know, develop a model and stuff like that to stand count. But from a farmer's perspective, it's basically nothing. So, you know, yeah, so for sunflower, I'm trying to do with that part. And then there's a wheat disease, and which is much more of a greenhouse experiment. We're trying to develop some phenotyping technologies with LiDAR sensor and 3D cameras and stuff like that to do. We are still not much into the analysis part of that project yet, but I think it should be soon, in a couple of weeks, since I think the phenotyping setup is kind of already made. And the challenge should be is what kind of a data we are getting and how do we use that data to analyze and process so that it can help, you know, the people who are basically working with wheat diseases. And for this research, we are collaborating with someone from plant pathology. I don't quite remember his name because I've just met him once.
Mm-hmm.
And he toured his greenhouse to us, and then he showed what problems we are facing, why we need automation in the first place. Because, I mean, you know, when I try to do my research, I just don't, you know, tend to use AI for the sake of using AI or just because it's trendy. But because it is actually solving some issues or it's actually automating some tasks, either in greenhouse setting or in field, although I'm much more interested in infield because that's where you could see a technology working. But, you know, this is just a small part of the greenhouse project that another master's student is involved with, and I'm kind of advising him. And I think, yeah, those are just the major ones that I am doing as a part of my current.
Awesome. I also work in plant phenotyping, so I really like to see that crossover into like disease mechanisms and disease management. I think that's what really excites me. So I love that you shared that with us. But then I'll have Camila ask the next question. So
yeah, those are amazing research. Yeah. So jumping to the next question that is related to the sunflower stand count, could you talk more about the imagery and the AI used? Like, could you explain a little deeper?
Sure. So if Katie was there in my seminar when I came at UNL, and I hope she remembers, like I said, like I did a very preliminary study back in 2019 where I flew like on a sunflower field, which was like a very small field. It was most probably like, I think 5 or 10 acres. And what we really did with that one was to just fly UAV and then do a stand count based on deep learning techniques. And with that, although we were able to publish a conference article on that one, but, you know, like what I said previously, you know, I'm trying to bring a holistic view with a farmer's perspective as to, you know, what exactly farmer wants and needs. And so for that instance, we're also looking towards creating like an open access or an open source GUI, which could just help farmers to pull their imagery, you know, and then our models will be able to count the sunflowers. We are not yet into that part because data analysis and, you know, generalizing the model to count or give at least close to accurate stand counts takes a lot of work. And on most of it takes a lot of time for annotation as well. So I think we are kind of right in the midway of that analysis when it comes to sunflower stand count using US imagery. Also, there are certain limitations when trying to fly such a small drone over such a huge farm. It's not at all practical. You know, and that's why, you know, like that's the reason I was just talking to the farmer, and he said, he was just laughing, and he said, you know, it's really not practical, but I would still like to see, you know, my, you know, I would still like to see or compare the results, what you get with the air seeder that I used to, you know, sow the sunflower, plant the sunflower seeds in his field. And so, yeah, that's where we are in our analysis with the sunflower right now.
And so you kind of talked to us a little bit about your stance on how we use AI, especially at the intersection of precision agriculture. Can you talk to us about, and because sometimes AIs might be a little new for our viewers, so can you talk to us about some of the most common site-specific tasks in agriculture that could benefit from the use of robotics and AI?
Sure. So one of the things, like I would, again, related to the weed, my weed work, which was there, and I think that the technology in that area is still not out there commercially. Now, when we talk about ground robotics, basically ground robots, which are there, you know, which are developed by industries like John Deere or Precision Planting, such big industries which invest millions of dollars in research. And that's the reason why we could see such big ground sprayers trying to precisely map the weeds and then spray them. But I think when we talk about drones, it's not quite there right now. But, you know, talking about site-specific and how AI and robotics could help is sometimes farmers, you know, sometimes farmers might, you know, use like a big sprayer on this, on the field to spray, but there would be still left out patches of weeds on the field. And he or she would not like to go and, you know, look for that patches and then spray them manually, or then again spend a, send a big sprayer to spray the weeds. In that case, I think drones, spot spraying drones could come into picture. They could just fly over, scan for weeds, and then spray. And it's going to be really helpful, and it's going to assist them. It's going to save a lot of time. The other area which I personally see is the disease standpoint, which I know that there are a couple of researchers out there that are trying to do that, is trying to map the disease, the crop diseases in real time. Right now, one of the technologies that's kind of there is we fly a drone most probably, and we bring it back to the lab, and then process and analyze those images to map the diseases in any crops, which is much more of a very passive process. And, you know, sometimes a researcher or a user might, you know, take plenty amount of time just to develop an algorithm, which might delay the whole process. And so where I see its applications is we go right in the field and then map the diseases, and so that the drone, the technology is able to create a real-time disease map of the whole field. For now, yeah, I think these are some of the most common site-specific tasks in agriculture where I see AI and robotics playing a huge role. I mean, there are other areas such as harvesting, which kind of helps, you know, kind of reduces the labor workforce that's needed. But I think, I personally think, and I might sound a little bit more biased, but I personally think that site-specific weed management using drones play a really significant, you know, important role in the future, especially when we talk about drones, drone-based spot spraying.
Yes, a drone is really in the market now, and I think it will help in a lot of aspects. So, talking about the drones and AI, do you think it's improving the precision and the efficiency in agriculture?
Oh, yes, definitely it is. I mean, if you look 10 years back, or let's say in the late 200s, like somewhere between 2005 to 2011-ish, there were a lot of technologies which were simply using image-based processing in the real time. And the amount of data that was being processed was very limited. So if there was an occlusion, let's say, again, I'm going to talk with Veet's perspective because it will be easy for people to relate if they're doing some other, in some other research areas. But if the Veet was occluded with crops and you were using a very simple image processing based analyses for real time environments, the algorithm might fail because it has not seen those clustered occlusions of the crops and the weeds and, you know, those very sophisticated environments. But one of the reasons why agriculture is the best place to apply data analytics is also because it's uncertain out there. It's very dynamic, it's changing. And so how we as researchers, you know, change technology or adapt or basically develop adaptive algorithms that would help, you know, achieve significant results out there in the field. And so, like I said, in 2005 or somewhere between 2005 and 2011, when you look at the technology, you know, they were trained on a very limited images. It would fail sometimes trying not to identify like significant amount of weed that was supposed to be, you know, recognized by a vision system. But right after 2013 or 14, when deep learning came into picture, and also, you know, NVIDIA's effort in increasing the computation of these kind of algorithms, you know, like the kind of GPU architecture that they build, now you could train millions of images, and you could throw whatever images you want, like the whatever kind of an environment, sophisticated environment or whatever it is, your algorithm still should be able to identify, you know, weeds in a very sophisticated and a very complicated environment. And I think in that perspective, AI has improved a lot right after deep learning came into pictures. I would still say that when conventional machine learning, I'm pretty sure that you guys might have also heard or used, you know, techniques like support vector machine or random forest or stuff like that. Those conventional machine learning classifiers were still trained on very limited amount of data set. And in most cases, you had to feed a lot of handcrafted features into those classifiers for it to recognize what a weed and what a crop is. But I think deep learning in some way has automated that process up to a very big scale. And I think it's just going to increase, and it's going to increase a lot more than what we see right now. Basically, when, you know, there's a lot of talk about generative AI and, you know, giving algorithms the reasoning ability, which I think that we are still really far. For instance, when I was, you know, last year when I was trying to discuss this with some people, I just said that, you know, we are only limited to training the models, just to tell the models where the weeds and crops are. The model in itself cannot reason out why we need to recognize weeds. And so that kind of reasoning, I think, is still, I mean, I think within AI field, we are still very far from that kind of reasoning. But yeah, to answer the question, yes, we have improved a lot. And in the next 5 to 10 years, I think with this generative AI and, you know, all this talks about consciousness, reasoning, I think it's going to improve much better.
That's awesome. I love to hear that, especially as, so much of precision ag's goal is obviously to be one, precise, and then two, efficient. And then how can we make that applicable for farmers? So I really like that you bring in a lot of, and like talking about the new, like the very trendy AI topics, bringing that into a sense of how do we make this application applicable? How do we approach farmers with these ideas and kind of give them a better sense of how they can be useful? I think is really important to the digital ag space right now. We were wondering if you had any thoughts about how artificial intelligence and robotics in agriculture contributes to the sustainability and environmental conservation aspect.
So I you know, talking about from drones perspective, because much of my research is in drones and not like developing a ground robot. So, you know, talking about sustainability, it does help a lot in terms of, you know, let's say if it's a, if, for example, let's just compare these technologies, although With drones, we cannot completely replace the spraying-based system, but the amount of soil compression that a huge sprayer causes on the field, it's a cause of concern. And just imagine if it's going to make like a couple of passes from that same space. It's going to compress the soil a lot, and it's going to be a lot of issue. Drone, in comparison to that, drone technology is environmental friendly. It's flying, and it's not releasing any sort of gases or fuel in the air or whatever it is. And it's kind of environmental friendly. And even if it is, let's say, for example, yesterday we flew drones for over 4 to 5 hours, but we were not worried about the amount of gas it's going to release, or the soil compaction or things like that. But with very big and heavy sprayers, which uses a lot of gas and fuel and stuff like that, that's an issue right now. And so I think even talking about those battery operated car-sized robots, car-sized as in the ground robots, and we see a lot of them in countries like Spain and Italy, that they're trying to develop something very small for weeding activities on the field. It's not as big as, a See & Spray by John Deere. It's small, compact, but it's still doing its job. And so I think AI and robotics are helping in that area. It's kind of efficiently trying to conserve the environment by being eco-friendly and sustainable. And also, I believe, when we talk about precision ag, that should be one of the key points, when we think about developing a technology. We don't develop something that's, although it's doing its job, but that's also harming the environment. It's not at all efficient. And so I think, yes, like when we do talk about precision ag, yes, that's something that plays a big role in developing a very effective yet sustainable technologies.
That's awesome. I like that.
Yeah. And as a researcher, what do you see as latest innovation in AI in site-specific agriculture, and where do you think the research is heading?
Sure. That's a great question. I mean, to talk about latest innovations in AI, now my perspective with this question is, since digital ag or precision AI is so closely linked with artificial intelligence, and if you open Twitter today, you're going to see tons of development in AI. Like someone, came up with a different kind of algorithm with much better accuracy or computational cost, or, decreasing the computational cost, or, things like that. And so, since it's so closely linked with artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is taking leaps and bounds each day. Tons of papers, tons of open source, pages and, and so I believe as much as there are, developments and innovations in AI, we will still be able to develop or innovate in the field of precision ag, because both of these areas are kind of linked to each other. You cannot take the other one out and then say precision ag. Although there are other aspects of precision ag that does not or might not involve AI. But I think major aspects, major part of it is just, requiring AI to be there. And innovations, talking about the innovation side of things, I think everything is just moving toward targeted applications. And I think as much more precisely we can develop a technology that could target just the things that we want, is going to be, innovative in the field of precision ag. For instance, like I said, big industries like John Deere and all are doing some very precise applications with weed management, but we are still lagging behind in drone. And I do know that, when you talk about drone spot spraying, that spot spraying part with drones in itself is a big research. Forget about creating an algorithm or developing an efficient algorithm, but, how to precisely spot spray on the weeds that we want is in itself is a big area of research. And if in the next 5 years or so, someone is able to develop some technology like that, it will be considered as an innovation. For instance, for another example would be, like I was having a discussion with this farmer, like I said, is covering 110 acres of field, basically for crop monitoring purpose with just one drone. Think about what swarm drones could help. After certain calculations, what we did find out that the drone was able to cover 15 acres in an hour. Just think, if we can send 4 drones in the field, it's just 1 hour for 100, 110 acres, which is just going to be really efficient. But, you know, those kind of innovations which help us save time, but can give us, you know, quick results and help us visualize the data that has been, you know, collected with such kind of technology. So I think within Precision Ag, there are multiple opportunities and multiple areas where innovations could happen. Like I said, this is not just limited to any one specific area. Like if you did something with precision spraying, then you can say, oh, this is like a great application. This application could happen in precision irrigation or maybe something in livestock. And, you know, so I think that's where it's headed right now.
That's awesome. I like that you bring up the perspective of swarm drones. I think that's really interesting. I don't know anything about it.
You're still very far away from that kind of,
yeah,
very far right now.
Kind of interesting though. I like the idea of like using, like having those multiple drones. I think you get past some of the technical difficulties where one drone can only go for so long or can only cover so much. So I think those were some really awesome perspectives to share with our viewers. Can you talk to us about how you feel that AI and the robotic use in agriculture might affect the labor market? Do you have any thoughts or opinions on that?
As far as, you know, what I personally feel, you know, as far as this labor market thing in concern with AI is, and I mean, the way it could be answered is, it's kind of increasing a lot of competition. You know, because all of a sudden, I still remember back in 2019 when I started my PhD journey, I still remember very vividly that stand count was still not very prevalent. I mean, there were a lot of companies, they were probably coming with a hypothesis to do something like that, how they could leverage deep learning to automate the stand counting. But something really happened after COVID, like 21, 2022. All of a sudden, multiple companies, multiple, you know, researchers or, you know, people in the university, they came up with a solution to do that. And so I think, you know, all of a sudden, and you know, let's say you go and talk with an average person in a precision ag researcher and ask him what he or she might be doing, and I can be pretty sure that one of the things that they might be working on is AI. So they're trying to include AI into everything. And so what that is doing is it's creating a kind of a very competitive atmosphere right now. And since AI, you know, we talk about AI to be used on a very large scale, and especially, you know, if I think of the country where I come from, you know, there are farmers who have a very small, who own a very small, you know, land. They might not be very happy to use AI. I mean, can you think about using such a big sprayer on such a small farm? You don't really need it. You need it for 100 or 200 acres. So I think that's also creating a gap between the mentality of a small-scale farmer and a large-scale farmer. And, you know, what it actually is doing is also it's creating a disparity in the economic side of things as well. So I think those are some of the areas which are going to get affected, you know, if AI comes into picture, you know, especially when we talk about the labor force market and all that kind of things.
Yeah, interesting. And talking about all these technologies, what do you think that are the actual challenges for farmers, for researchers in the field using the technology?
Sure. So I'll talk first about the farmers. I think one of the things that I keep hearing, you know, I kind of visit like different kind of workshops and also field day that recently happened and all that kind of things that happens around the across the university campus. I try to, you know, interact with extension educators or maybe people who, you know, look with that hope of using technology. One of the things that I keep hearing is return on investment, which is very, you know, which does not have a very firm ground when it comes to precision ag technologies. Yes, we are developing products. It's out there, but, you know, what's the return on investment? Are we really, you know, is it going to really deliver what it promises? So that question is always there with farmers. And some of the farmers who have been using, you know, very old technologies, and then they are very, you know, they are very comfortable using it. They just don't want to adapt to it because they're like, I don't want to use it. I don't know if I get some technical glitches tomorrow in the field, who is going to come and solve it? And so that question is always there with farmers and even with people who are trying to do. And and also one of the things which I feel is AI as easy and as trendy and as flashy as it sounds. Trying to, you know, fix it if something goes wrong in the field will take a lot of effort. And each time, you know, specifically with AI and robotics, each time an expert needs to be called to fix that. A farmer, I think, might not. First of all, the farmer does not have that much time to do that. Second of all, he or she might not be interested to do that. And so, you know, we need experts and for this one. And for the researchers, I feel something that personally I faced is two things. The first thing is the amount of time it takes to collect the data. And the second one, the amount of time it takes to annotate them. Each time you go out there in the field, if it's crops, and especially if you're trying to do sunflower stand count and things like that, it's easy because you just are looking at a sunflower and trying to annotate a sunflower, which is fine. But, you know, thinking about weeds, you need a domain expert for that. You need a domain expert to sit with you and try to figure out, you know, what species of weeds that is and, you know, why do we need annotation, what kind of annotation we need and all those kind of things. And so I think from farmers' perspective, yes, something that I discussed. And with researchers' perspective, data collection could be really difficult. Although a lot of people would say that we don't have tons of open source data in agriculture, which is really true, because it's hard to go and collect data out in the field, and especially on that large scale. And the second is data annotation, which takes a lot of time, you know, especially, you know, talking about grad students, they spend a lot of time for their objectives and for their research. And, you know, they just don't have this analysis, like data analysis task with them. They are also supposed to write manuscripts and, you know, present their work. So thinking from their perspective, data annotation, you know, just adds to that challenge. So I think, yeah, those are just two domains, I think, which really needs like kind of an upheaval or something. But those are some of the most biggest challenges right now.
Those are some great perspectives. I think the challenges, especially in how do we get these tech systems to the field and then how do we deal with troubleshooting them, is going to be a big issue and is a big issue in precision ag. Absolutely. That affects adoption. And I think you're absolutely correct, is the annotation of data. I think that is sometimes a big barrier of, yeah, we know these things and we can do these things, but how do we make this accessible and how do we make this understandable? So I really like that you shared that with this group. I think that'll be awesome perspective. Our next question for you is, what are you most excited about for the future of AI and robotic use in agriculture?
For that, I would answer is making AI more interpretable to the layman. Although, you know, I have a background in ag engineering, but someday I would like to work on making AI interpretable. Because right now, you know, most of these technologies are considered as black box, and then they a lot of places you'll go and then they will say, you know, oh, you're just feeding bunch and bunch of images into that black box and it's giving you something. But that's not what it is. AI could be explained. And I think with talking about from agriculture perspective, what I'm really excited and what something I would like to do something that really excites me is making AI explainable to specifically for agriculture. I mean, there are tons of other computer scientists or people, you know, doing different kind of explainable or, you know, interprobability AI or stuff like that. But how does an AI model learn features from the ag data? And I think if we can get to the crux of this thing, we can really understand how to generalize it for the good. For instance, I always keep talking about this in my presentations is that if I am into developing an AI model that could identify kochia here in North Dakota, it should be made, you know, it should have an ability to generalize so that it can also identify kochia if I take the same robotic technologies in Nebraska or maybe in Kansas. And, you know, that's again one of the challenges because we come up with a very, you know, marginalized or very small kind of a study and then say that we are getting 85% accuracy or 90% accuracy in identifying five different species. But is it going to give you the same results if you take this to a different state and to a completely different setting? And so I think at the heart of it, what's needed is understanding how the model is working. And, you know, it's the duty of us experts to do that. It's not the duty of a farmer. You know, a farmer can give his or her perspective, but as an expert, we are supposed to develop something for them, which is explainable and which could help them, you know, adopt technologies and stuff like that.
Nice. I would definitely use your program. I'm waiting for it. So the next question would be for students. So who wants to work with digital agriculture? What would be the first step and what are the required skills you found helpful?
Sure. The first thing that comes to my mind is get your hands on coding. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to, you know, write 10,000 lines of code to do something. There are already so many resources out there, but have a basic understanding of coding. Because, you know, I was teaching a class, I think that was either this spring or last semester, I don't remember quite well. There were quite students, I asked them like, do you guys have experience with coding? Because one of the labs basically dealt with microcontroller coding and stuff like that. And none of the students, they raised their hands and I was kind of disappointed because, students like that, when they come into the class, you cannot teach them from basics. You cannot start, you know, basics. And precision ag requires you to have that kind of skill. Again, like I said, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to write like 10,000 lines of code to show it to someone, but have a basic understanding of how everything is working. For instance, when I came here in 2019, I only heard the name of the software ArcGIS. And the first time I remember when my advisor opened it on his monitor and he showed me, like he pulled some imagery, US imagery, and he showed me and I was like, oh my goodness, like this is all you can do with this software. And then I just got my hands working on that and I tried to run, you know, try to learn what ArcGIS could do and, you know, how you could convert some raster to vector data and then you can extract like tons of information and visualize the data in a very, very clean manner and stuff like that. So, you know, I believe, yes, coding is the foremost, and then obviously GIS and, you know, other kind of tools could be followed after that.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. As a student with a biology background, I have, in the last 2 years, I have learned how to code in way too fast and also use ArcGIS a lot on a daily basis for a few projects. So I really like that you gave that perspective. I think that's be really awesome for our student listeners to hear and kind of confirms why we do some of the tedious tasks and why we learn some of those skills. So I like that. We're down to our last couple questions. So is there any additional topics that you want to discuss that hasn't been addressed yet?
So not exactly, because most of the things that I'm working on have kind of discussed with in this podcast. But yeah, I mean, I do know that there are a lot of trendy research, you know, maybe I should say ongoing research that's going on in genome editing side of things. I never knew that, you know, large language models could be used for things like that, where they could do some genome editing and try to, you know, create crops which with the desirable traits. And so, you know, maybe in the upcoming podcasts or something, if you have other visitors which would answer on such topics, or some expert who might be working on something like that, would be really nice, because in agriculture we do talk about precision ag and stuff like that, but not a lot of talk about genome editing and, you know, how AI is being used, because that's again a part of agriculture. Mm-hmm. More specifically, you know, bio side of things and stuff like that. And so yeah, that's something I would also like to explore in my as a part of my future research. Yeah.
Nice. And we got to the last question. A tradition on the FarmBeats podcast is to ask for a piece of advice. What advice would you give to anyone interested in developing AI and robotic technology for the future of agriculture?
Sure. For this, just a piece of advice, and this is like an advice which I also carry with myself, is go out in the field. Go out and see, you know, the challenges that agriculture is facing right now. Maybe during data collection, maybe just a field visit with a farmer, maybe it could be anything. Just go out there and see, because when you go and, you know, when you spend an hour or two in the field trying to either collect the data or trying to do something there with crops or with weeds or whatever, that's when I think, you know, you get a lot of thoughts about, oh, you know, this could be solved with the technology, or why isn't this like this? We could bring something which could automate this process of, providing like an automated solution. And so this is an advice which I also carry with myself. There are a lot of things that I learned about weeds and site-specific spraying when I actually went in the field. Everyone likes to be in an AC office space right in front of their monitor trying to analyze the data. I like it too. That's fine. But whenever you get an opportunity, go out in the field, see, you know, talk with a farmer, talk with an extension educator, learn about the challenges, you know, use the technology yourself in the field and try to understand, you know, what additional challenges that could be solved. Again, it's not going to be something that's groundbreaking, but in a smaller way possible. Yes.
That is excellent advice. And so applicable to our listeners and to our researchers and to our students that listen to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nitin Ray, for taking the time to join this episode of the FarmBeats podcast. It's really exciting how AI is collaborating with site-specific techs in agriculture.
I would have to agree. One of my favorite parts about this episode is learning about his research involvement towards the application of such technologies. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to sharing another digital ag story with you next week on FarmBeats.